the House of Representatives of Massachusetts to the Lieutenant Governor. In the House of Representatives, August the 3rd, 1770. Ordered that Mr. Hancock, Captain Thayer, Mr. Pickering, Captain Fuller, and Captain Sumner carry up to the Honorable Board the following answer of this House to his Honor's speech to both houses at the opening of this session. Thomas Cushing, Speaker. May it please your Honor, the House of Representatives, having duly attended to your speech to both houses at the opening of this session, and maturely considered the several parts of it, have unanimously, in a full House, determined to adhere to their former resolution that it is by no means expedient to proceed to business while the General Assembly is thus constrained to hold the session out of the town of Boston. Upon a recollection of the reasons we have before given for this measure, we conceive it will appear to all the world that neither the good people of this province nor the House of Representatives can be justly charged with any ill consequences that may follow it. After the most repeated and attentive examination of your speech, we find nothing to induce us to alter our opinion, and very little that is new and material in the controversy. But as we perceive it is published, it may possibly be read by some who have never seen the reasons of the House, and as there are specious things contained in it which may have a tendency to make an unhappy impression on some minds, we have thought proper to make a few observations upon it. You are pleased to say, you meet us at Cambridge because you have no reason to think there has been any alteration in His Majesty's pleasure, which you doubt not was determined by wise motives and with a gracious purpose to promote the good of the province. We presume not to call in question the wisdom of our sovereign or the rectitude of his intentions, but there have been times when a corrupt and profligate administration has ventured upon such measures as have had a direct tendency to ruin the interest of the people as well as that of their royal master. This House have great reason to doubt whether it is or ever was His Majesty's pleasure that your Honor should meet the Assembly at Cambridge, or that he has ever taken the matter under his royal consideration, because the common and the best evidence in such cases is not communicated to us. It is needless for us to add anything to what has been heretofore said upon the illegality of holding the court anywhere except in the town of Boston. For admitting the power to be in the governor to hold the court in any other place when the public good requires it, yet it by no means follows that he has a right to call it at any other place when it is to the manifest injury and detriment of the public. The opinion of the Attorney and Solicitor General has very little weight with this House in any case, any farther than the reasons which they expressly give are convincing. This province has suffered so much by unjust, groundless, and illegal opinions of those officers of the Crown that our veneration or reverence for their opinions is much abated. We utterly deny that the Attorney and Solicitor General have any authority or jurisdiction over us, any right to decide questions in controversy between the several branches of the legislature here, nor do we concede that even His Majesty in Council has any constitutional authority to decide such questions or any other controversy, whatever that arises in this province, excepting only such matters as are reserved in the Charter. It seems a great absurdity that when a dispute arises between the Governor and the House, the Governor should appeal to His Majesty in Council to decide it. Would it not be as reasonable for the House to appeal to the body of their constituents to decide it? Whenever a dispute has arisen within the realm, between the Crown and the two Houses of Parliament, or either of them, was it ever imagined that the King in his Privy Council had authority to decide it? However, there is a test, a standard common to all, and we mean the public good. But your Honor must be very sensible that the illegality of holding the court in any other place besides the town of Boston is far from being the only dispute between your Honor and this House. We contend that the people and their representatives have a right to withstand the abusive exercise of a legal and constitutional prerogative of the Crown. We beg leave to recite to your Honor what the great Mr. Locke has advanced in his treatise of civil government upon the like prerogative of the Crown. The old question, says he, will be asked in this matter of prerogative. Who shall be judge when this power is made a right use of? And he answers, between an executive power and being with such a prerogative and a legislature that depends upon his will for their convening, there can be no judge on earth, as there can be none between the legislative and the people, should either the executive or legislative, when they have got the power in their hands, design or go about to enslave or destroy them. The people have no other remedy in this, as in all other cases, where they have no judge on earth, but to appeal to heaven. For the rulers, in such attempts, exercising a power the people never put into their hands, who can never be supposed to consent that anybody should rule over them for their harm, do that which they have not a right to do. And when the body of the people, or any single man, is deprived of their right, or under the exercise of a power without right, and have no appeal on earth, then they have a liberty to appeal to heaven whenever they judge the cause of sufficient moment. And therefore, though the people cannot be judge, so as to have by the constitution of that society any superior power to determine and give effective sentence in the case, yet they have a law antecedent and paramount to all positive laws of men, reserved that ultimate determination to themselves, which belongs to all mankind, where there lies no appeal on earth, viz. To judge whether they have just cause to make their appeal to heaven. We would, however, by no means be understood to suggest that this people have occasion at present to proceed to such extremity. Your Honor is pleased to say that the House of Representatives in the year 1728 did not think the form of the writ sufficient to justify them in refusing to do business at Salem. It is true they did not by any vote or resolve determine not to do business, yet the House, as we read in Your Honor's history, met and adjourned from day to day without doing business, and we find by the records that from the 31st of October 1728 to the 14th of December following, the House did meet and adjourn without doing business. And then they voted to proceed to the public and necessary affairs of the province, provided no advantage be had or made, for and by reason of the aforesaid removal, meaning the removal to Salem, or pleaded as a precedent for the future. Yet Your Honor has been pleased to quote the conduct of that very House as a precedent for our imitation. We apprehend their proceeding to business and the consequences of it, viz., the encouragement it gave to Governor Burnett to go on with his design of harassing them into unconstitutional compliances, and the use Your Honor now makes of it as an authority and a precedent, ought to be a warning to this House to make a determined and effectual stand. Their example, though respectable, is not obligatory upon this House. They lived in times when the encroachments of despotism were in their infancy. They were carried to Salem by the mere caprice of Governor Burnett, who never pleaded an instruction for doing this, an instruction from a ministry who had before treated them with unexampled indignity, an instruction which they were not permitted to see. They had no reason to apprehend a fixed design to alter the seat of government to their great inconvenience and the manifest injury of the province. We are not disposed to dispute the understanding, integrity, families, and estates of the council in 1728. We believe them to have been such that if they were now upon the stage, they would see so many additional and more weighty reasons against proceeding to business out of Boston that they would fully approve of the resolution of this House, as well as of what has been lately advanced by their successors, who are also gentlemen of understanding, integrity, fortune, and family. In the following words, Governor Burnett's conduct in convening the General Court out of Boston cannot be deemed an acknowledged or constitutional precedent, because it was not founded on the only reason on which the prerogative of the Crown can be justly founded, the good of the community. We shall only add that the rights of the province have been of late years most severely attacked, has induced gentlemen to examine the Constitution more thoroughly, and has increased their zeal in its defense. You are pleased to adduce an instance in 1754, in addition to that in 1747, which you say makes it probable that the House of Representatives rather chose that the court should sit elsewhere when a committee was chosen to consider of and report a proper place for the courthouse at a distance from Boston. We beg leave here to observe that both these are instances of the House's interesting themselves in this affair, which Your Honor now claims as a prerogative. If the House were in no case to have a voice, or be regarded in choosing a place to hold the court, how could they think of building a house in a place to which they never had been, and probably never would be called? While the House had been from time to time holding up to view the great inconveniences and manifest injuries resulting from the sitting of the Assembly at Cambridge and praying a removal to Boston, it is with pain that they have heard Your Honor, instead of pointing out any one good purpose which can be answered by it, replying that your instructions will not permit you to remove the court to Boston. By a royal grant in the charter, in favor of the commons of this province, the governor has the sole power of adjourning, proroguing, and dissolving the general court. And the wisdom of that grant appears in this, that a person residing in the province must be a more competent judge of the fitness of the time, and we may add the place of holding the court, than any person residing in Great Britain. We do not deny that there may be instances when the Commander-in-Chief ought to obey the royal instructions, and should we also admit that in ordinary cases he ought to obey them, respecting the convening, holding, proroguing, adjourning, and dissolving the General Court, notwithstanding that grant. Yet we clearly hold that whenever instructions cannot be complied with without injuring the people, they cease to be binding. Any other supposition would involve this absurdity in it, that a substitute by means of instructions from his principal may have a greater power than the principal himself, or in other words, that a representative of a king who can do no wrong by means of instructions may obtain a right to do wrong. For that the prerogative extends not to do any injury never has and never can be denied. Therefore, this House are clearly of opinion that your honor is under no obligation to hold the General Court at Cambridge, let your instructions be conceived in terms ever so peremptory, inasmuch as it is inconvenient and injurious to the province. As to your commission, it is certain that no clause contained in that inconsistent with the charter can be binding. To suppose that when a grant is made by charter in favor of the people, instructions shall supersede that grant and oblige the governor to act repugnant to it, vacating the charter at once, by the breath of a minister of state? Your honor thinks you may safely say, there is not one of us who, if he was in your station, would venture to depart from the instructions. As you have not had the least shadow of evidence to warrant this, we are sure you could not say it with safety. And we leave it with your honor to determine how far it is reconcilable with delicacy to suggest it. In what particulars the holding of the General Court at Cambridge is injurious to us in the province has already been declared by the House, and must be too obvious to escape your honor's observation. Yet you are pleased to tell us that the inconvenience can be easily removed, or are so inconsiderable that a very small public benefit will outweigh them. That they are not inconsiderable, every day's experience convinces us, nor are our constituents insensible of them. But how they can be easily removed, we cannot conceive, unless by removing the court to Boston. Can the public offices and records, to which we are under the necessity of recurring almost every hour, with any safety or convenience to the public, be removed to Cambridge? Will our constituents consent to be at the expense of erecting a proper house at Cambridge for accommodating the General Court, especially when they have no assurance that the next freak of a capricious minister will not remove the court to some other place? Is it possible to have that communication with our constituents, or to be benefited by reasonings of the people without doors here, as at Boston? We cannot but flatter ourselves that every judicious and impartial person will allow that the holding the General Court at Cambridge is inconvenient and hurtful to the province. Nor has your honor ever yet attempted to show a single instance in which the province can be benefited by it. No good purpose which can be answered by it has ever yet been suggested by anyone to this House. And we have the utmost confidence that our gracious sovereign has no desire to hold the General Court at any place inconvenient to its members or injurious to the province, but rather that he will frown upon those who have procured its removal to such a place or persist in holding it there. We are not indeed sure that the ministry caused the assembly to be removed to Cambridge in order to worry them into a compliance with any arbitrary mandate to the ruin of our own or our constituents' liberties. But we know that the General Assembly has in times past been treated with such indignity and abuse by the servants of the Crown, and a wicked ministry may attempt it again. Your Honor observes that the same exception may be made to the use of every other part of the prerogative, for every part is capable of abuse. We shall never accept to the proper use of the prerogative. We hold it sacred as the liberty of the subject. But every abuse of it will always be accepted to, so long as the love of liberty or any public virtue remains. And whenever any other part of the prerogative shall be abused, the House will not fail to judge for themselves of the grievance, nor to exert every power with which the Constitution hath entrusted them to check the abuse and redress the grievance. The House had expressed to your honor the apprehension of a fixed design, either to change the seat of government or to harass us in order to bring us into compliance with some arbitrary mandate. Your Honor says you know of no fixed design to harass us, etc., upon which we cannot but observe that if you did not know of a fixed design to change the seat of government, you would not have omitted so fair an opportunity to satisfy the minds of the House in a matter of such importance to the province. As to your very condescending and liberal professions of exercising patience or using dispatch, as would be most agreeable to us, we shall be very much obliged to your honor for the exercise of those virtues whenever you shall see cause to remove us to our ancient and established seat. But these professions can be no temptations to us to give up our privileges.